are listening to Putnam Proud, a podcast about the Putnam County Charter School System in Edenton, Georgia. Our shows will highlight the school system, families, teachers, staff, and the community.
Hey everyone, welcome back. Steve here, and boy, have I got another exciting episode of the Putnam Proud podcast for you. And I've got with us today Katie Seymour, who's the instructional coach at the primary school. Say hi to everybody, Katie.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
And I've also got Mr. Eric Arena, who's the superintendent of Putnam Charter School System. Say hi to everybody there, Mr. Arena.
Steve, it's great to be here.
Well, glad to have you all here. And today our topic is literacy. And so we're going to start off by talking about, what do we mean by literacy? What are we talking about here, Katie?
Literacy has many facets and functions to it, but in our world, in education, it is how do our students learn to read? How do they learn to write? And how do they learn to express themselves verbally?
Very cool. You know, one of the things that we're going to get into is in a little bit is that you've been appointed to a council for the state, and we'll get into that in just a little bit. But let's take a little bit longer look at what when we talk about literacy, that it's not just something that you learn in the classroom, right? I mean, the parent, grandparents, the home life, whoever's at home, they have a great impact on this too, don't they?
That's right. Literacy can absolutely start at birth. There are so many skills that are not inherent. In fact, the newest science is showing that our brains were not created to read. They were created to speak and to hear. And so all of the components that make up literacy have to be taught. And those things can start at home as early as birth to 3 years old. All of those skills happen before they even begin school.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, one of the things I think that is important for any family to understand is that, having the child at a dinner table or at lunch and you're involving them and talking has an impact too, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Being immersed in language and conversation has such an impact on our students. That's how we learn how to speak and how to communicate, but it also plays a big role in how we learn to read and write. The way our children speak and the way they're spoken to is directly affected with what comes out on pen and paper later.
That's so awesome. I mean, as a parent, even taking time to sing to your child in the bathtub or to read them stories when they go to bed, all of that has an impact, I understand.
That's right. There are many things that we did as children that we're seeing is not happening as often, and it is playing a role in things that we have to do as early childhood educators. Some of those things include nursery rhymes. When we were younger, we sang songs that rhymed. We were told nursery rhymes. We recited nursery rhymes. We're not seeing that quite as often now. And so our students begin pre-K without that skill or recognition of rhyme. A lot of these early literacy skills have a 3-year acquisition. And so if you think about it, we have to be able to hear rhyme. We have to be able to hear words that start with the same sound. And when we haven't heard that, then we need to begin that 3 years later.
And see, what's interesting is, we've known research-wise that the number of words spoken in the house before children get to school is so important for the developmental process of our students. And some of our students don't have as many words spoken in their homes as others. A lot of our families have a tremendous home library where they have the ability to go and read different books and have different books, not only for their child to read, but also to be read to. Classical music, there's research that classical music, even during the pregnancy, if the mother is listening to classical music, it also has a benefit from that standpoint. And what does that look like for the long run? Unfortunately, the United States and the state of Georgia, they're looking at, our students and their ability to read on grade level by third grade. And there are some negative predictors for those students that haven't or aren't able to read by third grade. So it's a very significant, important process, and it's an important goal of ours to try to provide an opportunity for all of our students by the third grade to be reading on grade level. So, you know, there are things that we can do at the school, and we're going to be talking a lot about the things that we're doing at the school, but there's also a lot of things that can be done at home. You know, great athletes don't just work hard when they're at practice. They have coaches. Michael Jordan has his own coaches that he works on, or Tiger Woods had a swing coach. You know, so even the professionals have coaches that they have to work outside of their job in order to get better. And one thing that I want for our parents and grandparents to hear is, you know, our kids, they need to do some stuff outside of, if you want your kid to be a great reader, if you want your kid to have the best opportunity, then we've got to do work outside of the classroom. Our classroom, we have great professionals, and they're going to do everything they can. But it is also important when they're, even before they get to us, that you're reading to them, you're teaching them rhyming words, you're teaching them colors, and all of that language acquisition is going to benefit your child or your grandchild when they get to our professional educators.
You know, it's something that it's so, should be so near and dear to our hearts, is you know, that your child can be successful and you can have a hand in it, because you know, just by simple taking time to do some things with them. Can we talk about that a little bit more? Let's go into some of the things that a family member or parent, grandparent could help their child from early ages all the way through whatever age they're at to help them become more literate.
Absolutely. One of the main things that I think we need to think about as a community and as our school is how much screen time are our children receiving when they go home. We have seen the studies that show children who receive too much screen time are missing that face-to-face conversational piece of what they need to develop. So many times, parents can help their children by limiting screen time, putting some rules in place. Not all screen time is a bad thing, but too much of anything is a bad thing. So one thing that I would suggest is have rules of how much and when you can use that screen time. When they're not having screen time, remember all of the things that are important: conversations at the dinner table, reading bedtime stories at night, talking through situations with students of how to handle emotions and how to handle situations that they've occurred. Also, telling stories is another great piece to work on with students. We don't realize that telling stories and being able to tell a story often goes directly into their writing. They have to be able to verbally tell a story to be able to put it on paper. So all of these little small acts seem to be not as important, but they directly affect literacy.
So Steve, you know, as whether you're a parent or, you know, grandparent, or you know, in the future you're going to be a parent, you know, something as simple as 30 minutes a day, you know, between you know, dinner time, where everybody sits down at the table and has a meal, and bedtime, you know, to pull your child or grandchild in your lap and to read, you know, for 30 minutes would be such a wonderful. First of all, it's a wonderful connection with your, as a parent and a child, or a grandparent and a child. But it's also that time of trying to show kids about the enjoyment of reading and those kinds of things. So you're creating that bond, but you're also creating sort of the appreciation of the spoken and written word, and those kinds of things are going to benefit your children, your grandchildren, as they move and matriculate through the school system.
That's so awesome. I mean, you know, it's funny because sometimes I think we get lost in our world, and we don't realize, as parents, I mean, and you know, we do different things. We got work going on. We got this going on, but just this simple impact of involving your child in a conversation and talking has incredible power. I think that's one of the things that you know, sharing that as often as we can with parents and future parents to encourage them to do that is important. I mean, you want to talk a little bit about, you know, even like, you know, giving books and reading it, and just some of the different types of things that they can do with it. And you know, you're at the primary school. What, Katie? What? Where else can we go with this? With some thoughts about it.
Absolutely. So one of the things that I suggest to parents is read to your children nightly, just like Mr. Arena said. But as soon as they can read, they need to be reading to the parents. Now, one thing that becomes difficult with that is having books that are that they're able to access to read. So there are many different resources that we can provide at the school level that will give you those books that are on your child's level. But as soon as they learn to read, they need to be reading. And then that relationship is built as well. Students, like Mr. Arena said, learn to read on the laps of their parents or their grandparents. So using that new knowledge of learning to read and being able to share that with an adult is so important. Another thing that parents can work on at home is as simple as learning the alphabet. So our children who come to us prior to Head Start, which is our three-year-old children, a lot of times parents will teach them to sing the alphabet. And so now we're seeing that as soon as they can sing the alphabet, let's start saying the alphabet so that we're learning that what we're singing and what we're saying are actual letters and that they're separated and they're not in rhyme or tune. So little things that parents can do make a big difference. Another thing that I suggestion that I give to our Head Start parents, go ahead and start writing your child's name anywhere in their environment. They need to see the letters in their name. And as soon as they can do that, they need to be able to spell the letters in their name. Because once they recognize that the letters they're saying when they say or sing the alphabet are also some of the letters that are in their name, then we've come up with a group of letters now that they're very comfortable and familiar with. There are lots of other tips that I'm sure we'll get to later, but those are a few for our early childhood parents.
And let me just give, and this is going to be interesting to see if this transitions through a podcast, Steve, but let me just try to make an illustration of what Ms. Seymour is talking about, is that the value of our students, especially early age, seeing letters. Because let's take, for example, a pencil. If you can imagine a pencil in your head, and I turn that pencil to the left, it's still a pencil. And if I turn that pencil upside down, it's still a pencil. And if I turn that to the right, it's still a pencil. But think about the lowercase letter B, as in boy. If I turn that letter upside down, then it goes from a B to a Q. The pencil stayed the same, but that letter, by turning it upside down, may go to a B to a Q. And then if I rotate it 190 degrees, that B may go to a P, or that Q may go to a P. So think about it from a child's standpoint. Is part of their life, they're learning that an object stays the same if it changes within the context of their world. But these letters, by the way that they're manipulated or turned, all of a sudden, they have not only a different name, but a different sound. Think about how foreign that is to a small child in trying to learn this thing called reading or literacy or language. And as adults, we don't necessarily, we've already learned it, so it doesn't really resonate with us. But that example or that illustration, if you can sort of picture that through this podcast, that gives you, at least in my mind, an illustration of what our children have to try to grasp and understand as they tackle literacy and reading.
And one thing you just touched on is actually the new science that we're seeing with reading. Scientists have been studying the brain for over 30 years and are now seeing that when they used MRIs or some imaging to see what is actually happening in the brain when someone reads, we're now noticing that there are multiple pieces or parts of the brain that have to activate to have reading happen. And so when you talked about letters and children understanding that symbols are now letters and they have a name, that actually occurs in the occipital lobe of your brain, so in the back of your brain. And then the child has to make the connection that those letters also make a sound. So that happens in the temporal lobe of the brain. So we are having to activate many portions of the brain with simple tasks such as this. So then students have to realize that these letters come together and can make words and make sounds. There's a lot of science behind what you just said, and a lot of students have to learn that so early before they even come to us. And then we have to take what they know and continue that process so that we do have readers and writers.
Yeah, it's so it's just so amazing how a child can progress as they have opportunities that are provided for them. They start learning, they recognize their letters and recognize how to put them together, and then start messing around with that to figure out how things happen, and then to just start loving to read whatever it is that attracts them in that area. That I remember, you know, one of the things that fascinated me was right off the bat that I started being focused on was like books about animals and things like this, and it's just an amazing thing. I am a parent, but they're a little bit older now. But the point is that to see that progress happen, and to know that you can have a hand in making sure that they're doing some of those things, and encourage them to read. Because I got to tell you, for my own personal, I love to read, and I read a lot, and my family will laugh at this because it takes me. I'm a little slower reader than they are. They devour books, but at the same time, yeah, there's nothing cooler than whether it's a nonfiction or a fiction, is that you find that little happy place you might have by reading and using your imagination, or reading and learning more. So good stuff. So let's kind of shift for a minute to are on a council that I understand has to do with the state. So let's go there for just a minute. Tell us about that council.
Sure. So like Ms. Serena mentioned earlier, the state is working on literacy, and there's been some legislation that has been passed. House Bill 538 is what we're calling our literacy laws. And this created a council with Senate Bill 211 to ensure that the pieces of 538 are carried out, and to give some recommendations to anyone working with House Bill 538. Some of those recommendations or pieces that need to be carried out are a universal screener that we will implement along the state 3 times a year to identify students with possible reading deficits earlier. We're also looking at what instructional pieces or curriculums are we using to teach multiple areas of reading, so phonemic awareness, phonics, fluency, vocabulary, comprehension. And then what interventions are we putting in place for students who we have identified as struggling readers, and how can we intervene early so that we can fill those gaps and move them on to be able to be successful readers. So the council is made up of 30 people. Some are teachers and educators, some are superintendents, and some are elected officials. And we meet multiple times a year. We have working committees that are working on each of those pieces from the law that I mentioned earlier. And we're trying to make sure that we're doing the research, and we're making sure that each county in the state is going to be able to have access to each of these components, and that all students are going to be able to be successful with their reading, no matter what their zip code is.
That's one thing, Steve, that we mentioned earlier that literacy is such an important component of the total educational process for a child. But it's also tends to be a predictor for future success. So the state of Georgia is really getting involved with trying to make sure that every zip code, every school system, every student has a basic opportunity for literacy, regardless of where they are, South Georgia, North Georgia, metro, rural. So Katie is one of those 30, and we're really excited. The governor actually got to select 12 or appoint 12 for this committee, and Katie was one of the 12 that the Governor Kemp added to one of his 12 for that committee. The work has only been going on for about 3 or 4 months now. They've only had a couple meetings, but we're really excited about having a seat at the table. Katie and the work that they're doing with Dr. Rogers and Ms. Smith at the primary school, the work that Mr. Sauls and his team, Ms. Williamson, and the academic coaches at the elementary school, all the way through to the work, you know, that as we are developing career pathways through middle school with Ms. Macklin and high school through Dr. Cooper and their team. So we're really excited about building a continuum of learning, and the state has just sort of come to the table and wants to make sure that, you know, similar of what we've been doing in Putnam, that they're able to do that statewide. So really, I'd like Katie, if she could, talk a little bit. Now, this may get a little bit technical, but for the last 6 or 7 years, we've been dealing with or working on a literacy plan. So you want to talk a little bit about, maybe at a 30,000-foot view, of what we're trying to do as professional educators as we move our kids from non-readers to being able to read and to communicate and to write, you know, by the third grade.
Absolutely. So, lucky for us, a lot of the work that we've been doing is actually mirroring what the state is pushing to do throughout the state. So we have implemented screeners at the primary school, even down to the pre-K level, where we can identify students who are not on target in multiple areas. So are they not on target with phonemic awareness, which is how you hear sounds and manipulate sounds in words? Are they not on target with phonics? How do you read and spell words with different patterns? And then how fluently can you read it? So we have many measures to identify students early and then throughout their school career. One thing that I think I'm most proud of with Putnam County Schools is that it doesn't matter if they start with us or if they come in second grade. We're able to screen them and give them exactly what they need to fill any gaps that they may have missed in their educational history. And through the work with the elementary school and the partnership that we've had the last several years, that can continue on through elementary as well. So our students are getting their needs met no matter where they are, where they come from, when they start with us. So outside of screeners, we've implemented interventions at each of those levels to go ahead and intervene. We monitor those interventions regularly. As soon as students have filled in any of those literacy gaps, they no longer need the intervention. We continue to monitor them. Outside of interventions, we've also changed some of the curriculum that we're using with our students at the primary and elementary schools. These curriculum follow what science is telling us of how students learn to read, so we're trying to stay up to date and current on what that science is saying and what we need to give our students to match that.
So think about it, Steve. You know, with over 3,000 students, they all learn at different rates. You know, sometimes it takes us a little bit longer than other students. And so, you know, what Ms. Seymour and the elementary staff are doing is basically individualizing your literacy journey. Now, think about that for us with 3,000 students. That's sort of a pretty big undertaking. But with 1.7 million students in the state of Georgia, think about an individualized learning plan or an individualized process for 1.7 million students in the state of Georgia. So it's a pretty significant undertaking. It's much easier from adults to one size fits all. Everybody's got to learn it at this time, at this rate, and if you don't, then you know you get pushed to the side. But part of what education is evolving, and we're really excited about what the work that we've been doing for a couple decades with Standards Mastery is providing a continuum of learning, and that we're working with individual students to learn at their pace, and that when they need some additional assistance, they get it, and when they catch back up, then we can take that additional assistance away, and that they can you know move at the pace that with their contemporaries are moving. And that's really the exciting piece with us, is sort of that fluid or continuum. You know, a lot of people think about a school learning opportunity as 180 days. But with us, we have the opportunity with Summer Inspiration to have sort of the entire summer as an opportunity platform for additional learning time for, but the learning is going to continue throughout the summer. And then when we think about it, it's not just a grade, but it's 13 consecutive years of continuum. So that, you know, if you get a little bit behind at this time, we've got time to catch you up. But that's a different concept than maybe 50 years ago with education, thinking about everything was a distinct timeline, and you had to, everybody had to hit the same mark by a certain date. And that's sort of a little bit different way of thinking, and that we've been thinking about for a couple decades here in Putnam.
One thing I'd like for our parents and grandparents and anyone who's listening to know is what an opportunity these students have with Summer Inspiration. At the primary school and even some at the elementary school, what we do during that extended learning opportunity, which is one of the camps that is offered at our schools, is we continue their interventions. And these are interventions that our personnel have been trained on. The students never have to stop. So they've been getting this intervention all school year. And, you know, you often hear about that summer slide that students might have, which really just means they take 2 months off and then we have to back up and review information that we had currently taught. Well, now students don't have to have that summer slide. There are many districts and neighboring communities that don't have this opportunity, and parents are spending thousands of dollars for private tutors to get the same types of interventions that our students receive all year and then can continue in the summer.
You know, this is it's so awesome to have this focus, because, you know, it really impacts a kid's future if they're more successful at reading and want to read, as opposed to it's a drudgery to try and just get through a couple pages or not. And, you know, it's can we talk just a little bit about some of the things that we might also be looking at when it comes to kids who struggle, to find out why they might be struggling?
Absolutely. There are actually many ways in the reading process that a student can struggle. A lot of times we just think, you know, in the past it's been, well, they can't memorize sight words. And we're so far beyond that now in the science of reading that we know students don't just have to memorize. A lot of our students don't have a great working memory. And so in the past, that would have been an issue where if you didn't have a great working memory and you couldn't memorize sight words, then you didn't learn to read as fluently as other students. Now we know that there are many components that we can work on. Some of those include alphabet knowledge. So that's where we begin working with learning to read. Identifying letter names and letter sounds and putting those sounds together through phonemic awareness. We can identify that students can't blend sounds together. So if you can't do that orally, you're not going to be able to do it in print when you go to read. And then after we move beyond that, we get into decoding. Can you work with different patterns in our language to read and spell words? Can you identify those patterns? We intervene quite often in phonics, and that's where decoding comes in. And then beyond decoding, can you comprehend and read fluently? Does the fluency that you're reading or the rate that you're reading at affect your comprehension? Like you mentioned, kids who don't love to read and they are not as automatic, their comprehension is oftentimes affected. So each of those little pieces are where areas can go wrong, and we as educators have to identify where that piece is and intervene at that level so that the rest of the foundation is strong to build upon.
And one thing, Steve, I'll say, and not being an expert like Katie Seymour and the other academic coaches, but just more of a generalist, think about this, is that in order to lift heavier weight in the weight room, you've got to push heavier weight. You have to work your muscles in order to get stronger. And regardless of what career our children are going to go into, whether it's a technical career or it's more of a professional career, there's going to be learning or there's going to be a need in order to read. And technical documents oftentimes are written at a higher level than some of our other documents. So, you know, being a welder or being a craftsman or being a plumber, those are some technical reading that's required within those professions that so everybody needs to be able to have a strong muscle. The mind is a muscle. And one of the things that parents and grandparents need to understand is, you know, we've got to, whether we like to exercise or not like to exercise, whether we walk or run, but to go and run a marathon, you have to train for that marathon. Part of the thing is the muscle of the mind is that our kids need to understand that they've got to train that mind. They've got to read. They've got to be read to. They have to be willing to exercise that mind. And as parents and grandparents, we need to encourage that. And that's really, we in order to get stronger, we've got to push heavier weight. In order to be better students, to be better successful citizens, we need to strengthen our mind. And reading is just one of those ways that we can do that. Writing is also another way.
Absolutely. And I think it's important for us to share the message with our kids that it's okay to struggle and it's not going to be easy. It's going to be difficult. But we don't learn to ride a bike by watching someone else do it. We learn to ride a bike by falling down and getting back up and learning the lesson. And it's the same with reading. We learn to read by practicing, messing up, not being afraid to take the risk. And really, that is what it is for our students. It's taking a risk and not being afraid to fail. And then eventually we learn to read.
Yeah, it's so powerful. And so one of the things that's really cool is that, you know, hey, for those of you who have, you know, as an adult, you also have, you know, siblings, you can always encourage them to be the aunt or uncle that gives a book or two. You know, I had one of those aunts who I look forward to every birthday because there'd come some new book on it. She'd find out what I was reading, and I still have this collection of books on dinosaurs because that became my thing after a while. And you know, eventually I grew into the ones that got turned into movies and stuff like this. But all the nonfiction stuff that was written at the time, and you know, it's just there's so many different ways you can encourage your family members to become part of that. And I think that also that makes the family come a little close together and take a role in it, which is awesome. I got to ask you this, Katie, because this has got to be kind of cool. Talk about professionally for a minute to be an instructional coach and have a chance to talk to the governor about what you think.
It's been interesting. And one thing that I told Mr. Arena when I talked to him about taking on this extra piece is I was so impressed with the fact that they wanted educators and they wanted to hear the voices of the people doing the work every day. And so I think we have a different perspective of the people who may be making laws and appointed officials. So I was excited to hear that they wanted to hear what is actually happening with the boots on the ground people. We've had lots of great conversation in the council, and there's been a lot of questions and things that we're able to clear up, I think, for the general public who don't see the ins and outs of what's actually happening in the school.
This is so powerful. You know, to be able to have those voices, because and a lot of times it's just the voices have one thought, I think, and that's it's so encouraging to have people who are working with the children of their state right there with them. So powerful. We're getting close to kind of wrapping things up here, and what I'd like to take a look at is if we could kind of revisit and talk about the things that a family could do to encourage their child to further develop in their reading skills. And so even if you're talking with your, I mean, not only can we talk about primary age and early childhood times, but how about, you know, maybe you have a reluctant reader who's in the middle school or high school levels, what you might be able to do. What do you think?
I think the first thing that I would suggest is be an active participant in their educational career. Know what they're doing, what they're working on, know who their teachers are, be in communication with their teachers, and don't wait until report card time to find out if there are issues that you can help with at home. be in communication with that teacher. If you notice that your child is struggling with reading at home, find out what opportunities are available to him or her at the school level. There are multiple ways that we can help at school. And then there are some things that we can give more specifically by the child at home with suggestions. So I think that's with our upper elementary and middle school, that's a big indicator there is how active our parents are and how willing they are to be a partner in this educational journey. And then for our young primary students, things that we mentioned before, make the time at home to talk with your children. Make the time to read with your children. Make sure that they understand that you realize that this is an important piece of their educational career. When they see us reading, they want to read. When they see us talking with other family members, they want to be a part of that conversation. So be present, be active, and be a partner.
And Steve, I think that one of the interesting things, I've been in this business for a number of years, and oftentimes, you know, parents will say, well, my kid doesn't have homework. Well, if you remember earlier in this session, we talked about the opportunity for parents or grandparents to read to their child for 30 minutes. So think about it. If for 18 years or so, there was 30 minutes to an hour every single day that you set aside to either read to your child or grandchild, and then your child or grandchild actually continue that time to read for their entire 18, 28, 38, 48, 58, 98-year life of just spending time with, whether it's the Bible or whether it's any kind of topic that they're interested in. Library cards in this community are relatively inexpensive, if not free. While you're in the school system, you have access to all kinds of books with all kinds of genres, all kinds of topics. Find something you enjoy. It could be reading about sports. It could be reading about animals. It could be reading fiction or nonfiction. But I would encourage you as a family to spend 30 minutes to an hour every single day reading, even if your high school kids and middle school kids tell you that they don't have homework. As a parent, you know that working out that muscle is going to be good. Working that brain, take that time, commit to it, do it, you know, consistently and constantly. And at the other end of the journey, they're going to be stronger with their mental aspect. Their literacy is going to be better. And they're also going to put down some of that screen time and pick up a book. And that's also going to benefit them in the long run.
This is so powerful because, you know, it's, I think about in my own development of reading, and I've been around for a while, but you know, it's one of those things that I think back to. One of the things that encouraged me to continue reading was I really got into comic books. I was you know, a Spider-Man and Batman fan, and all kinds of the comic books of the day that some have referred to as graphic novels today and so forth. But I really got into the idea of, I walked to the 7-Eleven. Yes, 7-Eleven and those types of stores used to have comic book racks. And I walked down there and I go through the comic book rack and find my comic books and buy a drink and go read. And, you know, it's there's all kinds of things that encourage it. In those days, in the area where I live, they had a bookmobile, which was from the public library, which you could go to and... just note, you'll see a little theme here because it parked right next to the 7-Eleven. And so I would go in, get my books, and then, you know, get a drink and then walk home. And but there's all kinds of interesting things that happen to kind of encourage us to read. And that's a little bit about my background. So the encouragement to read can come from a lot of different ways. Can you go there just a minute, Katie?
Absolutely. I think you both have hit on this, is finding what works for each student. There are different interests, and there are multiple ways we can find material that match each interest. Like you said, graphic novels are back. So there are many graphic novels that our elementary school students are really loving now. And we've found that we're able to hook some of our reluctant readers because you don't see multiple words on a page. You see short, small glimpses of text with all of these great illustrations. So if you have a child that is a little more reluctant and you haven't found what works for them or what they're interested in, reach out to their teacher. We have multiple inventories that we can do for interest studies that will help us lead them to what books they're interested in. And we have wonderful media specialists in this county who would love to work with students to find that interest.
That's excellent. So one of the things I'd like us to talk about for just a second is that there are some special situations that happen sometimes with children, and one of them is dyslexia. I was wondering if you could comment towards that for just a minute, that interferes with the ability to read.
Absolutely. So dyslexia is a form of a learning disability that can happen within the brain where students can see the words differently. So sometimes they see the words as they are rotated upside down. Sometimes they bounce on the page. But regardless of what form of dyslexia a child has, it affects how they read and how they write. And prior to just, you know, a decade ago or so, we just lumped these students in with a learning disability, and so we weren't able to identify exactly what needed to happen to intervene for these students. There has been some dyslexia legislation that has been passed also, and luckily for us, it's happened at the exact time as the literacy legislation. So we can actually pinpoint these students earlier through the use of universal screeners and find out what exactly they need as an intervention. Now, something with dyslexia to know is it's not going to be a quick fix. So we have multiple personnel in our district that are trained with intervention tactics or techniques for students with dyslexia, but just know that it's going to be several years to intervene to help these students, but it is possible. All of our students who have been diagnosed with characteristics of dyslexia are able to be successful readers with the right intervention.
And one thing to think about, you know, as a community with a learning disability, that doesn't change how successful a student can be. That just necessarily changes the process for learning. There are opportunities and mechanisms that students with dyslexia can master in order to still learn to read, to read well, to comprehend. Their fluency can be quite good, but part of that journey is that they then learn tactics on how to help them maneuver through literacy. And that's the exciting piece, is that with grit, with determination, any and all of us can be successful in literacy, even if we don't necessarily like it. I don't like to run, but guess what? If you need to run and you work out, you can actually be pretty successful at running. You know, you may not like to lift weights, but if you continue to persist at it, you can get stronger. And it's the same thing with reading and literacy. You don't have to love it, but I would encourage you to do it until and you find the topic that you enjoy. And then I think that you'll start to see the benefits of it. And then eventually I think that you'll learn to love it.
This has been an awesome discussion today, and I greatly appreciate where we're going as a parent, as an educator, as someone who loves to read. I'd love to see children learn to read and take that on their own. Any last thoughts you want to share with us, Katie?
I'm just excited of where our state is going, the work that our county has put in over the past 5 to 6 years to get ahead of this movement with literacy. I want to encourage anyone listening to do the work with your students or with your child and be a partner. I want to thank the teachers that are doing the work day in and day out, and all of our school personnel. And I'm thankful to be here to share this literacy journey.
And Steve, I just want to say that, you know, I'm excited and proud of the work that our professional educators have been doing and are doing. Proud of the state of Georgia for taking on this initiative. But the hard work that teachers and parents do as advocates for their child and the children in their classroom. You know, there's no better profession than being a parent and no better profession than being a teacher. And I am truly honored and humbled to be around some of the best educators and some of the best parents that we have in this community.
Thanks for listening to Putnam Proud. Do you know someone who hasn't listened to Putnam Proud yet? It would be awesome if you shared this show with a friend, colleague, community member, family, everyone you know. The Putnam Proud podcast is created for educational purposes. All opinions are those of guest and host. Thanks for listening.